हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So, Bhagavat-sandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarna 2, Brahman is an ansha of Bhagavan. So, bottom of page 35. The commentary says, I am all beings. I am the enjoyer, Atma, of all beings. This means that the universe made of enjoyers and enjoyed objects is not different from me. This is because I am the cause of the manifestation of all beings, Bhuta Bhavanaha. But the manifestation of the universe is Shabda Brahman, and the cause and manifestation is Parabrahman. That is true. Both are my forms. Shashvati stands for Shashvatyao, dual neuter. Shabda Brahman is an amsa of Parabrahman, since it assists it. So he is everything. He is the person of saying, I am doing all these things. I am controlling everything. I am the enjoyer of everything. And so then the point is made, but the manifestor of the universe is Shabda Brahman. And the cause and manifestor is Parabrahman. So he says, yes, but that's the point. Both are my forms. So me is, as a person, I expand through both these two forms to control the universe, you know, manifest and control the universe. So there's no problem here. So that's the point, is that the Brahman and Paramatma feature are angsas of Bhagavan. So that's the thing. This is interesting. Universe made of enjoyers and enjoyed objects is non-different from me. This is because I am the cause and manifestor of all beings, right? So that means everything in the universe is from the Lord, and it's for enjoyment, but for the Lord's enjoyment. So when the living entities perform all their tasks in context with the Lord, then it takes on, that's where it takes on the aspect of the devotional service. And that's what we see, is that's what the, I think it's, was it Vishnu Purana is talking about, how performing all your duties in the context of the Lord. And so that's then where that begins. So one has to see is that everything is the Lord, whether we see it or not. Just because someone doesn't see it doesn't mean that it's not correct. And so it's all the Lord, and so therefore it has to always be seen in the context of serving the Lord. And if it's not, then there's an aberration there. There's something wrong. And so that's what has to be corrected in the consciousness. So when that's corrected, then everything works very nicely. And if it's not corrected, then we have a problem, right? Does that make sense? And that problem is bigger than, you know, Houston's problem, right? Sankarshan spoke thus to Chittaketu. Yes.
So for me, it's not clear. So it is said that the cause is Parabrahman, and Shabda Brahman is the manifestation.
Yeah, it manifests through Shabda Brahman, but the cause is Parabrahman.
Parabrahman is the Supreme Brahman.
Yes, that means Krishna is a person. See, the context that we're bringing out here is that Bhagavan, the person, Brahman is his angsa, right? Paramatma, that's that people are going to accept quite easily.
Yes.
Because that's not a problem. It's one of his expansions, and he expands to regulate the universe and everything like that. But the difficulty comes up is that in Brahman, for the Vaishnavas, it's not really a problem, but for the impersonalists, you know, in the Mayavadis, then they think Brahman is the supreme. Yes. And Bhagavan can also be Brahman, but they'll take it that Bhagavan is just another part of the Brahman. But it has to be seen as the other way around.
Yes.
So that's why the statement's being made here. So you see here is the Parabrahman means the person.
Yes.
Right? Because even if you're not, then even if you want to take it technical, is that Brahma, Shabda Brahman is the cause and is the cause, but manifester. But behind that is Parabrahman, or say Paramatma, or Vishnu. But behind him is Bhagavan.
Okay.
Right? Yes. So there's always going to be that point. It always goes back to Krishna. So no matter how far back you go, it ends at Krishna. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
So it's one of the most important point, because for impersonalists, it's very difficult to accept that how Bhagavan can be material cause. They may accept him as the original cause, but efficient and material cause to accept him as is very difficult. Because for them, because the universe has faults, and naturally if Bhagavan is the cause, then all the faults should attribute to him.
I mean, that's the idea, because no one wants to accept their own faults.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let us say you have that Walla, you know, famous guy in Japan who sits there and hand makes all of his kitchen knives. Right. And he's famous all over the world for this. So if you want to spend a ridiculous amount of money, you buy his knives. Right. Now, then the point is now if we misuse the knives, then somehow or another, is that now his fault? Right? If I cut myself and I blame him, why did he make it so sharp? Why did he make it so good? You know? So that's the difficulty, is that the living entity doesn't want to take the fault, they don't want to take on themselves. You know? And at the same time, is then we see from Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that they want to say, you know, we say that there's the living entity is small and the Lord is great. And they'll say, no, no, they're one. Right? Because in other words, in the greatness in the Lord, we want to be part of that. But then when we say there's the Supreme Lord and then his energies, the Jiva. And so in this way, then, you know, they're one because they're non-different from the Lord. Then they'll say they're two. So this is exactly what is meant by the mode of ignorance. Then you take religion to be irreligion, irreligion to be religion. So where the example is showing that they are two, they'll say they're one. And where the example is showing that they're one, they'll say they're two. So this becomes a problem. You know, it's just that it's just there's an idea they want to be God. And so you know, so whenever there's a fault, it's someone else's problem, right? Like that, because they just don't want to be at fault. Because you're God. If you're God, you're perfect. So if anybody's going to be imperfect, it's going to be God, not you. But when you're God, it just makes no sense. But whatever it is, it's very, very popular. But yes, that's a good point. So that's why I was saying, is the element of cause and effect, that's fully understood. I mean, that's only understood really within Shankhya and Vedanta. But then even there, we see that Shankara has kind of like left that part. They'll use it to some degree and some degree not. But the other schools don't actually understand it properly. Does that make sense? Okay.
Guru Maharaj?
Yes.
Guru Maharaj, Hare Krishna. I have now some student. He is Mayavadi from India. And
right.
His name Bhagavan Das. And
Bhagavan Das. Yeah, just always call him Das.
He consider that even in Shastra was written that Krishna said Aham Sarvasya Prabhavos. He said only because for our level, but when we will get spiritual level, we will understand that we in unity with him. And his second point is if mass starts from zero, means even Bhagavan is Atmarama, one. Zero was it before one, and that's why Brahman is before. Is it inductive logic?
Of course, because they're just starting from their own platforms. Why would he be talking for? He's talking that we can understand, but where in Gita does it say that there's some other position, that there's this different position that they talk about? Where is that from? Because unless it's authorized by scriptures, so he's just saying that. Oh, he's just saying that. You know, that's just like in gossip things. Oh, they say, oh, he's just saying that. You know? So the point is what's the authority for saying that? No, that's the way it is. That this is only for beginners. Because Bhagavad Gita, according to Shankara, is a very important book. Gita Upanishado Gavo Dugda Gopalananda. It's the essence. So if it's the essence, it must be saying everything. And he says, what is it? Brahmanohi Patishtaham. He's the basis of Brahman. You know, so the point is that this is their own interpretation. They're speculating. They're not taking the direct meanings because they don't want the direct meanings. You know, it's just like when you tell somebody something they don't want to hear, then they interpret it in their own way. So that's all. And the other thing is, how is zero the basis? How is nothing the basis? Nothing is used because there's something, there's nothing there. But that doesn't mean it's solid. Just with nothingness, you have math? Just have zeros, there's not math, but with one, you can do something. Right? So can you do something with nothing? No, one is the basis. And then if there's not one, then that's two. So we have to understand zero is a negative, not a positive. One is positive, zero is negative. So why would the negative be the basis? One, the positive is the basis. You know, because they're trying to eliminate the material world, so their whole process is negative. So in their illusion, they may think that the negative is the basis, but how would negative be the basis? Then why is it they're looking for Brahmananda? Their goal is positive, you know, in their mind. Why isn't just getting rid of everything isn't the perfection? It's enjoying getting rid of everything. So the ultimate goal then is that enjoyment is like that. Yeah, still like that. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and you can always call him Mr. Das. In the next two Anuchetas, Brahman is presented as impersonal vibhuti of Bhagavan. So vibhuti, it's an opulence of Bhagavan, like that he has his energies that go everywhere and everything. So it's one of his opulences, is how he pervades everything. But, you know, he's the person who's pervading everything. Anucheta 96. Brahman is the impersonal vibhuti of the Lord since it is an incomplete manifestation of Bhagavan. It's incomplete because it doesn't have the personal aspect. The impersonal is there, but the personal is not there. But the person includes the impersonal, right? The person has energies that expand through things. You can see the effect of the person in the house. You know, so many things are there, but the house is not complete on its own. Because the house is expanding from the person, not the person expands from the house, right? Right? People build houses, not that you build the house and then when you finish, then it's full of people. You know? So therefore you see is when the contractor is making the house, right? And then they're doing, everything is done, but there's this one little part on the side of the house where there's one paint stroke that's not put, it's just blank, you know? And then the person asks, you know, why that's blank? He says, because as soon as we paint that, the house will manifest people, and how are we gonna, you know, sell it or rent it if it's already got people in it? So they don't finish it so that other people can buy it and move in, right? Because the house manifests the people, not the other way around, right? So why is it like that? They just take it, oh, it must be opposite. But what's opposite? Means they're taking it, it's opposite. Where do we get the context of opposite? From a reflection. But in the reflection, does that mean the opposite side there's nothing? No, the opposite side there's reality. On this side, then there's the reflection, which is incomplete. So that's the problem, is they use these mundane logics, but because it's mundane logic, it's fallible. It's incomplete. You know, they're taking material elements to think with, so their intelligence and all that they're thinking with. I mean, they're using, which are incomplete. So unless they're in context of the complete, then they don't become take on that. Okay. Madhyam mahimanam cha param brahmeti shabditam vetsyasyanu grihitam me samprashner vivritam hridi. By my mercy, you will realize my power known as the impersonal Brahman, which will be disclosed in your heart through questions and answers. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24-38. Mahimanam means a power, the vibhuti without quality. So he has so many powers that are there, but some have qualities, but this is the vibhuti without the quality. Like that. So it's special. So it's you can say it's underlying everything, but that doesn't mean it's the main thing. So it's just like this, like the previous question. Okay, you stand on the floor, so the floor is more important than the people. It's the original thing. It's the main thing. So it's all about the floor. In fact, people walking on the floor just mess it up, and the janitor has to work very hard. So therefore, in the janitor's mind, get rid of all the people and just keep that supreme floor, and then everything's perfect. Right? Unfortunately, he is also taking care of the floor, so that kind of messes up the philosophy, but hey, we'll ignore that part. So that's the whole thing, you know, or let's say your lunch is on a plate, so that means the plate is more important than your lunch. Right? So we never see it all that way. No, it's because of lunch, there's a plate. So because there's Bhagavan, therefore there's his unlimited impersonal vibhuti. Does that make sense? Okay. You will know this Brahman, aparoksham, in the heart, revealed by me, by mercy, anugrihitam, uncovered by your questions. Right? Because as you inquire into it, then the Lord gives answers. Since this realization of Brahman is included in realizing me, it does not depend on separate realization. So as you appreciate Krishna, then one appreciates Brahman. One tries to appreciate Brahman on its own, then it'll be in the negative. But when you're realizing a connection with Krishna, then it's dependent upon the positive. So the negative doesn't have a negative effect. When one realizes me through bhakti, this realization does not appear independently. If you have a desire for this manifestation, then you will realize it, Uddhava says. Etau hi vishvasya cha bija yoni ramo mukundav purushav pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau puranau. These two lords, Mukunda and Balaram, and each the cause of the universe, the Nimitta and Upadana cause, the independent eternal lords enter the hearts of all of living beings and control their awareness of Brahman. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:46-31. Dhyanasya indicates one Brahman since it is in the singular. Right, so he's taking that the two of them together, they're just one. But there's two entities. So one is the Nimitta and one is the Upadana. Right? Upadana is the ingredients and the Nimitta is the? Anyone? The cause or what? Sorry?
Upadana is material and Nimitta is the efficient cause.
Okay. So then what's happening? So then between both of them, then they take care of it. So yes. Krishna, because of Krishna, therefore there's the manifestation, because Krishna desires that the living entities have an opportunity to come back to him, right? So they're not coming back to Mahavishnu. They're coming back to Krishna, right? So Krishna is the Nimitta, right? So that's the whole point, is that that yes. And the Upadana, then we see is then as Mahavishnu, then as Sankarsana, then he expands everything. All the elements come from him. And he enters them and everything. So, yeah. Has something, sir.
Yes, Maharaj, I just wanted to ask you what you explained right now.
No? Okay. Ma'a. We're getting more of a kind of, what do you call that, like popsicle kind of presentation here? Meaning a bit frozen.
Yes, it was.
But could you kindly repeat your question? He's back, but his question is not back, or his point is not back. Ah, now he is back.
Oh, sorry, Maharaj. Oh, you couldn't hear me. I no, didn't realize.
It went into like that.
Oh, okay. No, I just wanted to ask you what you already explained right now, the Nimitta and Upadana, who is who. But I was also thinking is that we can also say that, you know, Krishna and Balaram, they're both Nimitta and Upadana in a sense.
Yes. Yes, yes, of course, in the, like that. But the point is because we're establishing Bhagavan as the highest, then you're going to be establishing Krishna. That means then from him is coming his expansions, both in the Vishnu Tattva and in the internal potency and his Jiva Tattva, right? And so then they're all in that mood as servants. And so Bhagavan, him, the original person. But yes, you can say is then Mahavishnu is doing something, and then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu will be manifesting the different things. Then you can say he's then Kirodakshaya. So you'll always have that as you move it down. It becomes that same kind of relationship, but that's there because the original position of Krishna, then he. As the person, anything expanding from him will have that same context, right? The same qualities, you know, in a lesser degree or a lesser manifestation. So that's then the Satkaryavad, right? So that's the point here is that you'll see it then with Balaram and then Mahavishnu, the same kind of thing. Because Balaram is expanding it so to please Krishna. And Mahavishnu is then serving Balaram. But the point is it ultimately goes back to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? The bhakti stops at Krishna, right?
Maharaj?
Yes.
In the Paramatma Sandarbha, first when the Purusha Avataras are described, so first, it describes like now what is the function of each of them, like Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Mahavishnu. And after that, he explains how Krishna is the same personality as this Purusha Avataras. So from that, then it's Krishna who is doing all this function.
So, yes, because these are parts of Krishna's mood and personality. So when he's doing that, he takes that form. Because it's a different form, we seem to take it as a completely different person, but it's the same person, just different mood. But in that mood, each form is eternal, so they can also then interact with each other. And because they're servant of the servant like this, then they have that mood, but they're in the Vishnu Tattva category. But that's why Balaram is known as the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. Right, so that means of all the servitor godheads, he's the supreme person. But Mahanarayan, he's also servitor godhead. But Balaram is superior to him, though he'll be superior to the Chaturvyuha, and then they'll be superior to Sankarsan, Prajumna, Anirudha in the material world, like this. And also they'll be superior to the expansions of the 24 Vishnus in Vaikuntha. So each one will be serving back until Balaram, and Balaram serving Krishna. Just like all the energies go back to serving Radharani, she's serving Krishna.
Maharaj,
Because that's why I say then, you know, she's the top devotee. Because even Balaram, then by controlling the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis, he is giving that background support for the Haladini Shakti, for Krishna's enjoyment, because that's his desire. His desire is to enjoy with his energies. So then even he's indirectly serving her. But in the past times, he'll be the elder brother, so he'll be respected and everything like that. And all the living entities, they're all serving the internal potency. So, but both of them are guru, right? The spiritual master represents Nityananda Prabhu or Srimati Radharani, you know? And there's not a contradiction in both being there. Because the point is you're serving Krishna through the internal potency, but by the grace of Nityananda Prabhu, one can be freed from material consciousness. Right? Then you can properly function in bhakti. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much. Okay.
Okay, so this is, Matsya spoke thus to Satyavrata, Anucheda 97. Concerning vibhutis, it is said, I am form, taste, aroma, touch, and sound. Ahankara, the Mahatattva, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. The 11 senses, the living entity, Prakriti, the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, and Brahman. I am all of these, along with knowledge of them, and the determination of truth resulting from that knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:16-37. The commentary says, the word param means Brahman. End quote. Thus, Yamunacharya of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya has said, quote, your manifestations of powers consist of whatever is visible within the universe. The coverings of the universe, each 10 times thicker than the previous layer, the gunas, pradhan, the purusha, the spiritual world, and the impersonal Brahman, para Brahma. Stotra Ratna 14. So, point is it's one of the vibhutis. It may be connected more directly with him rather than an energy, but the point is whether it's expanding, you know, on one side or the other, it's still all him, and it still acts according to how his dictation. Panga Shruti says, Esha Stri, Esha Purusha, Esha Prakritir, Esha Atmaisha, Brahmaisha, Loka Esha, Aloka Esha. Yo sau harir adir anadir anto anantaf paramaf parad vishwarupa. The Lord is woman, man, Prakriti, Atma, Brahman, this world and the spiritual world. He is a beginning without beginning, the end without end, supreme among the supreme and the form of the universe. The beginning without beginning, the end without end. The Lord spoke thus. Sarva Sambhadini. Though the followers of Ramanujacharya do not accept the concept of impersonal Brahman with no qualities, Brahman can be considered to be the Lord without manifestation of qualities by those who accept Brahman with qualities. The word Brahman indicates Brahman possessing qualities as in the following. So Shnute Saravan Kaman Saha Brahmana Vipashtita. He enjoys all things along with omniscient Brahman, having qualities. Taittiriya Upanishad 2:1:1. They explain this on the strength of the word saha. This will be explained later in the main text. Right? So that means you have the Nirvisesh Brahman and the Savisesh Brahman. But now Nirvisesh Brahman is always meaning that without any material qualities. Right? So the Savisesh means with quality. So the point is just saying that the Brahman is unlimited and unchanging and eternal, all these things, these are qualities. So it has, but these qualities are impersonal. Like we say strength, it's just a general quality. But then when we apply strength to, you know, the stone or the person or that, then it takes on that personal quality. So it can still be impersonal and have qualities. So when we say nirguna, we mean there's no mundane qualities, it's unaffected by the mundane. Yes, so there's another question?
Yes. So what do the Ramanujacharya followers don't accept?
They don't accept that there is, what's this? Oh. They don't accept that that there is this nirvishesh Brahman. That Brahman having no qualities, because they'll say is that there's no material qualities, but there'll be the spiritual qualities. The point is that as he points out, it's not a problem in this way because Brahman can also be considered the Lord without manifestation of qualities by those who accept Brahman with qualities. So it's just the Lord is manifesting without qualities, but the Lord has qualities. So that way there's no problem. So you just take it back to the person. It's just that in the discussion, because the Upanishads will be saying about how he has no qualities. That's so we understand he has no material qualities. Does that make sense?
Maharaj?
Yeah. Yes.
So the Ramanujacharya, he gives a very big purport explaining that any object is identified with qualities. So if there are no qualities, then the object doesn't exist at all.
Yes.
Because it's illusory to say that an object exists without qualities. So here he quotes that point.
So that means Brahman has to have qualities, otherwise it won't exist.
Yes.
You know, so it is existence, so it must have qualities. Yeah, it's just, they're just putting the emphasis on that side rather than this side. Because they're just trying to get rid of because the Mayavadis are saying nirvishesh, and they're trying to say on that side it has no qualities. But he's saying, no, on this side there's no quality, that side there is quality. So depending upon the preaching position, they may emphasize one side or the other. And so they don't deal with, just like with Madhvacharya, he doesn't deal with the concept of oneness. He only deals with two. Even though it's there in the philosophy, but he only acknowledges oneness on the other side in the spiritual realm. That there, then there's that oneness of mood and quality and all that, but he doesn't emphasize it. So that's why it's Dwait. But otherwise, when you get to Vaikuntha, then he'll be talking very similar to Ramanujacharya. So this idea that, there's a difference, that the difference in the philosophy, there's a flaw in Ramanujacharya's philosophy, that's why Madhva came and said this, that's the Tattvavadis might say that, but that's not the standard position. Position is that Ramanujacharya converted so many people back into the proper Vaishnava understanding. But the really hard nuts that were left, you can't use any words that they can misconstrue. So therefore, he won't use any context of oneness. And so it's just a preaching technique. So it's not that he has a problem with Ramanujacharya like that. But he mostly is talking about getting it together here. He's not talking as much about what happens over there. Right? He talks about how to qualify to go there. So he's talking mainly here. Well, Ramanujacharya will be inspiring one in going there. Then you have the special oneness, you know, that mood, that like that. Does that make sense? So even ourselves, that's also understood. We understand that that's there. So the emphasis is on the particular interactions between the Lord and the devotees, right? The vibhavas and anubhavas and all these aspects. Well, they'll just, because it's in grandeur, then it's just that you have that one and that's the specialness and you and God have this closeness and all that kind of thing. So that's the taste they have. You know, while Madhvacharya will be the Lord's the Lord and I'm his servant and all that, they won't put as much on that emphasis. So it's the same place, same service, but a slightly different flavor of whether you're seeing that closeness because of that kind of mood, or you're seeing as two and rendering service. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Krishna Maharaj?
Yes.
Okay. So actually in the verse, you know, about this Gangashruti, it seems that there are quite a few verses in the Vedas that are conceivable to understand with the material logic.
Yes, yes, because that's why you have to approach through a bona fide spiritual master coming in parampara, because otherwise you won't understand. But the Vedas keep everybody, means anyone who's pious can keep themselves busy by following the Vedas, no matter what their philosophy and goal is. That's why you have the six different philosophies. So they can, they're still following the Veda, but their goal may be different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so then it still works. They're following the Veda. So if you're following the Veda, then if someone comes along who's giving pure devotional service, then you don't have to change the lifestyle. You just change now the consciousness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, you just change the level of consciousness you're functioning at. So that's the advantage. Like you see so many times is that those that are not from a Vedic background many times have trouble not so much with the philosophy as much as with the religious process itself, because it's so different than the religious process of those who are not following the Vedas. Yes. You know, it's just more about just sense gratification.
Yes.
So there's no concept of engaging the senses in a higher level or something like that. It's not there. So there'll be some struggle with that, you know, trying to find yourself and everything. Well, if you're following the Vedas, then it makes it easier. But then at the same time, because you're following the Vedas, then you can get distracted by that aspect of goodness and think everything's all right. And because of that, then there may be that tendency not to take things very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that becomes then a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So each has its strength and weakness, like that. So the one, because of the identity, it's a mode of goodness, external identity and engagement in the subtle and gross, then they'll get attached to the religious side, but the philosophy they may not understand, because they'll be adjusting the philosophy for their, you know, their own purpose. Mm-hmm. While for the others who don't have that religious attachment, then for them, then they can easily accept the philosophy, but then the religious process will be the weaker side for them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, is because of that, because the philosophy is, you apply the philosophy, you get the religion, there may be areas that become difficult also. And this aspect of the personal and impersonal, that's one feature of the, how you say in the Western culture, they don't understand about Brahman, this, that, blah, but they are impersonalists, right? Even in their religion, if you push too much, they'll come to the impersonal position, right? If you just talk about God as a person and that, and leave it at that, and don't go into details,
yes.
Right? So in other words, you can only just say, you know, about his position as God. And that he's a person, but you can't get into too much detail. You can't get into, so name they'll all accept, but form qualities, generally they do accept also, but the form and the pastimes, that's what you don't get into. Because at that point they might switch over to impersonalism. So it's just the basis is if you're materialistic, you will be impersonal. Right? Because the thing is how can you not be impersonal? Just like, let's say, a thief, right? They have to be impersonal to take things. So they don't connect it with the person. They just connect it with that, you know, it's just there. You know, this person's wealthy, so they have stuff lying around, so I'll take it. But you don't connect it back to the person. Otherwise, how do you use it? How do you enjoy it? Right, mm-hmm. So it's just always going to be a basis, that impersonal position. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's always going to be a bit of a stumbling block. So that's why then he has this whole Sandarbha just explaining this point. And it's one of the Dasamul. Means this as Krishna is the absolute truth, but this means as the absolute truth. The absolute truth means he's the person, because everyone will accept, okay, God's the absolute, but do we accept that God's a person as the absolute? Right? We'll accept that Brahman or Paramatma is the absolute, but we may not accept Bhagavan. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Yes. Maharaj, the only option, you know, when we don't have, when you don't accept the parampara, the only option is speculation.
Yes, the only option is speculation. You know, and even if you accept the parampara, we can still tend towards the speculation. And so then we're advised to give that up because the acharyas have already given the direction. So then we're contemplating what they said. We're not speculating. We're not giving our own interpretation on that. You know, just like Mataji said before, is Krishna is only saying this in the Gita for our benefit, but it actually, in reality, on the topmost platform, it's not like that. So that's speculation, they're taking things. So we can say, yes, Prabhupada said that, but he didn't actually mean that. He means something else. You know, so there's an overemphasis of something and not seeing it in context.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's all. So you have to see it in this balance. It's nice balance. You know. So, you know, like Prabhupada talks about the brahmacharis and they're studying. So then they become knowledgeable because with knowledge, then they can properly perform their duties and everything. But at the same time is then if it's taken too far, then Prabhupada say, we're not making scholars, we're making devotees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's the whole thing is that one has to be very careful about that. And you see is that generally always fails. Anytime they make an institution that's just based on scholarship, it never works. You know, there's some hoo-ha and everyone glorifies and they get in there and they, you know, but after a couple of years, it just falls apart because it's not what we're doing. Does that make sense? Yeah.
But it seems that it is quite difficult to find the balance in many things.
Yes. That's why we're dependent upon the acharyas and the Srimad Bhagavatam and, you know, the Vedic literatures to be able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's why Puranas are so important, because then they give example of how people did things. So that's why we see is the important books are all through that medium of Purana. Gita from Mahabharata, then the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're all in the form of Purana.
Yes.
You know, in the way of that it's an itihas describing individuals and their path of attaining perfection or their position in that perfect place. Yeah. Then it makes it so much easier. Even then we can make a mistake. But.
Yes. Actually, by reading, for example, Bhagavad Gita, a few times the understanding is developing.
But there
are still some, influence of Mayavadi, personalism.
Well, that's why then you see here the acharyas going through and so carefully, point by point, every angle that we could come up with impersonal. Because you can get, Krishna is the person and expanding from him as the Brahman. So the Brahman is his expansion. That's enough.
Yes.
But
yes.
We have to, from so many angles, prove the junior position. Because we may, you know, take, yes, that's there. But then from another angle, then we'll bring in the impersonal aspect. No, the person's the origin. Because that's what we're not used to. Is when there's a person, that's small, and then the expansion, that's big.
Yes.
But the point is that expansion, you know, like you have the one little guy, but then he has these, you know, huge factory, and he has, you know, offices and branches all over the world. So that's the impersonal aspect. But it still comes from the person.
Mm-hmm.
Person's there, it runs. The person leaves, it may fall apart. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is the personal is the origin. Well, we're so used, we always take it, the impersonal is the origin.
Yes.
You know, you say, oh, but it starts as a concept and then you build and then you manifest it. But who's thinking about it? Right? Is that iron ore sitting in the mountains thinking, wow, I'd really like to move around really quickly. I want to become a car. And so because of this, the mount goes, okay, boys, let's put out the vibes, right? You know, and then they put out the vibes. And then Mr. Ford goes, ooh, we can make a car like that. And then, you know, and while this is going on, then the mountain, you know, iron ore is sitting there nodding and going, another perfect day. Yeah. You know? So, you know, that's the whole thing, is that they always leave out steps because it just seems much more satisfying. You know, it's just like when something's going great, you feel like you're the greatest.
Yes.
Like that. And so therefore that I am Brahman, then that's fine. But I am Brahman, meaning I am the Brahma Jyoti, rather than I am Brahman, just I am an energy of the Lord. That makes me Brahman, but I'm 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. That they don't want to hear about. Because at least I'm this big, right? You know, but now I find out I'm, you know, so small you can't even see us. Right? So that's the problem. It's attached. It's due to attachment. It's due to envy, because we're envious of Krishna and his position. We don't mind taking the position, but we don't want Krishna to have the position. Is that okay?
Fine. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Priti, in the next Anucheda, Brahman is designated as the radiance of the Lord. Anucheda 98. Since there are no qualities manifested in the form of Brahman, it is designated as the radiance of the Lord. There's no qualities manifested. Doesn't mean that the qualities don't exist, but they're just not manifested. Otherwise, if they weren't there, how could Brahman manifest the material world? Because it's based on Brahman and it has qualities, therefore those have to come from Brahman, but they're not manifest in Brahman, right? Okay, because there are no qualities manifest in the form of Brahman, it is designated as the radiance of the Lord. That form which they say is invisible, the cause of all causes, the greatest self-manifesting radiance, without qualities, without change, pure existence, without variety, and without action, is directly you, the Supreme Lord, who manifests our intelligence. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.24. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Krishna, Vishnu, is the actual origin of everything. As stated in the Vedas, yasya bhasha sarvam idam vibhati. The absolute truth is described later in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.28.15 as satyam jnanam anantam yad brahma jyoti sanatanam. The Brahma Jyoti is sanatana, eternal, yet it is dependent on Krishna. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. The Brahma Samhita states that the Lord is all-pervading. Andanta rasta paramanu jayanta rastam, Brahma Samhita 35. He is 535. He is within this universe, and he is within the atom as Paramatma. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagaranda koti koti svasesha vasudadhi viputti bhinam. Brahma Samhita 540. Brahman is also not independent of him. Therefore, whatever a philosopher may describe is ultimately Krishna or Lord Vishnu. Sarvam kalvidam brahma, param brahma, param dhamma, pavitram paramam pavam. Bhagavad Gita 10.12. According to different phases of understanding, Lord Vishnu is differently described, but in fact, he is the origin of everything. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.24, purport. Thus it is said that the Lord's Vigraha has an effulgence, Jyoti, which is Brahman. Brahma Samhita says, I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose powerful form radiates in effulgence known as the undifferentiated, unlimited, all-encompassing Brahman, which is completely distinct from its powers, displayed in unlimited planets throughout billions of universes. Brahma Samhita 540. Devaki spoke thus to the Lord. Udriti, the following excerpt from Jiva Dharma elaborates on this subject. Vrajanath, the Upanishads have declared that Brahman is transcendental to this material nature and is the highest absolute truth. Therefore, kindly explain to me what arguments Sri Gaur Hari Chaitanya has put forward to establish that Brahman is the bodily luster of Sri Hari. Raghunath Das Babaji. Sri Hari is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The following statement from the Vishnu Purana 6547 enumerates the qualifications of this divinity, of his divinity. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasa striya jnana vairagyayosh chaiva sannam bhaga itingana. One who possesses all these six divine and inconceivable excellences, known as bhaga to the utmost degree, namely opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, is the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, thus known as Bhagavan. These six qualities are inseparably connected, like the body and its limbs. However, which of them is the body and which of them are limbs? Body means that which is the resting place of the limbs. For example, the tree trunk is the body and the branches, twigs, and leaves are the limbs of the tree. Similarly, the human torso is the body and the arms and legs are the limbs of the body. Of the Lord's qualities, unlimited beauty is the very nature of the transcendental form of the Lord, and thus the principal quality forming the body of which all other qualities are extended limbs. In this way, opulence, power, and fame become the three limbs of the Lord's beauty. And from this quality of fame, the subordinate and related qualities of knowledge and renunciation radiate as the Lord's effulgence. Right? So those, yeah, beauty is the main, and then opulence, power, of fame become the limbs of the beauty. And then knowledge and renunciation. And from this quality of fame, okay, because there were, what was opulence, power, and fame. And then from fame, the subordinate and related qualities of knowledge and renunciation radiate as the Lord's effulgence. So from beauty comes opulence, power, and fame. And then expanding from related to fame, then comes knowledge and renunciation. So interesting how they expand, right? Right, so you see beauty is the original, right? Then you get opulence, power, and fame, right? Then you'll get knowledge and renunciation. So in beauty, you have the sweetness. In opulence, power, and fame, you have the Aishwarya. And then in the knowledge and renunciation, you have the, you know, undifferentiated Brahman, right? So you see the Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman features are related with these qualities. But, yes, sir.
Maharaj, so basically, according to this paragraph that we read, the effulgence is the effulgence of Bhagavan's qualities as such.
Yes. Yes. Then another place it'll say, his qualities, because yes, unlimited qualities, that's why the Brahman is unlimited, the Jyoti is unlimited. So it's just the effulgence of the qualities. So that's the thing, it's the effulgence of the qualities. So there are the aspect of qualities there, but they're not manifest. When qualities aren't manifest, that's called Brahman. When they're manifest, that's Bhagavan. So the point is the qualities are the origin. Otherwise, what's the point of the effulgence? Where would you get effulgence from? It has to come from somewhere. So there's the body, right? The form of the Lord, the Sarup, that's the original.
Yes. I think now we're getting the fruits of struggling with Vedanta Sutra, because now it's getting a little more clear what is this all going on.
Yes, yes. So that's the whole idea, you know. That's it takes a few. That's why they give us 12 years to try to figure it out. You know.
Maharaj, this is from Jayavadar, third year course.
Yes, yes. What I'm just saying is that from the analyzation within the Vedanta Sutra, now one can appreciate these fine differences that are here. Well, at the time, one couldn't appreciate, you know, the things, because it just seems so technical. But because of that, now you can appreciate these fine points here. Because that's the thing, is that the same principle is there, it's just where it's applied. See, is that, because in there you're dealing so much with knowledge and renunciation in Vedanta Sutra. You know, and then you have others where it's talking about the opulence, power, and fame. But then you talk about the sweetness, the beauty. And then that you can see is like a nectar devotion, all these fine divisions of, you know, the Vibhava and the Lambada. You know, so he, even there he's making the difference between the qualities of Krishna that are Alambana as opposed to, you know, Vishaya, as opposed to what's Udipana. Because we would just take it and say, oh, they're called, those are Udipana. Those are, but no, he has those qualities. So they're not, the. It means they may also be Udipanas. But the point is that he has those qualities, that beauty, that all these different things. Then the various ways of seeing that beauty and appreciating, like Mother just showed, we'll see one aspect, the gopis another, the cowherd boys another. You know, it's just like with cowherd boys, you know, that he's dressed really nicely, that inspires them. You know, because it's just like friends. You have friends who, you know, appreciate good dressing. If another one of the friends comes out, you know, they're going out somewhere and they pick everybody up, they go around the car, pick up everybody. And when they pick up one of the guys, he's really, you know, really sharp. You know, everyone else, woo, okay, you know. So it inspires, you know, and because of that, you know, they want to, you know, how you say, you know, how they grab their hair and you rub the, you know, the knuckles on their head, or, you know, whack them on the back, or, you know, somehow or another, the anubhav that they want to reciprocate, but it came from seeing, wow, how nicely dressed he is, you know, or even, you know, say, you know, hey, what rags are you wearing or something, but everybody knows it's fabulous, you know. You know, does that make sense? You know, so it's just have all these flavors come up. So that fineness is there all the way through. It's just a matter of, you know, how to see it. Because otherwise, we're used to seeing fineness in relationship to sense gratification. You know, someone can tell the difference between, you know, this cheese and that cheese, and or this wine and that wine. And, you know, people can take something and smell it and this and that and go, oh yes, this is from this year and from these fields, you know, that's been manufactured by this, and that's this particular, they know that, they can just tell by tasting. So that refinedness is there, but it's based on the platform of the senses. So then you're having to take that refinedness and bring it to its pure nature, where you're able to see, you know, then the refinedness of seeing what are your social duties, you know, what a, how that connects to Krishna, how we're not the body, we're the soul, you know, and how then, you know, Krishna is the supreme, how he has these three features, because for most, they only understand one feature, that he's the unlimited Brahman. Some will understand, they won't put the emphasis there. They'll put him at, he's the, you know, they'll look at opulence, power, and fame, right? And only those who appreciate Bhagavan understand the other. But otherwise, the knowledge and renunciation, you start there. You know, it's just like a monk. You don't expect him to be an idiot. You expect him to be knowledgeable and renounced. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so that was why they were not quite sure about Friar Tuck, right? Because he's this guy that goes around with his cart that's full of beehives. So he moves around to wherever the flowers are, and the bees are making honey. And then what does he make with the honey? He makes mead. Right? So, yeah, not exactly what you'd call your best idea of a monk. And not only that, he became part of the entourage because he was a good fighter. He was big and he could wield a stick, a big stick. So generally you think of a monk, you think knowledge and renunciation, right? That then, you know, God and opulence, power and fame. But then he has beauty, personal beauty in that. Who talks about it? Don't say he's nice, of course he's beautiful. But if you try to describe his form, it can't. So this refinement can be used in all these three levels. But because we're used to is we've reversed the thing, we'll take the top levels and use them for himself. So therefore, yes, opulence, power, and fame, we'll get into detail how to get it for ourselves. But in the power of knowledge and renunciation, it's kind of like, you know, 50-50 there. You can't be too attached. You can't be too this and that, right? Does that make sense? So once I have the knowledge, then I'll try to move up into fame, power, and opulence. Because of my knowledge, I'll have fame, I'll have power, I'll have opulence like this. So on that level, then you can make the distinction and then be able to tell the difference between matter and spirit, right? And then doing that, then within spirit, you can see the variety within spirit. Is that good? Yeah, so they're very interesting points here. Huh? And from this quality of fame, the subordinate and related qualities of knowledge and renunciation radiate as the Lord's effulgence. Therefore, Brahman is the brilliance of the entire creation and of the Lord's transcendental form. Perception of this radiant Nirvikara Brahman, that is the supreme without activity and transformation, bestows Brahmagyan, spiritual knowledge, and thereby Vairagya, material renunciation. Right? So you get that knowledge and you get the renunciation. Because the Nirvikara Brahman is the effulgence of the unlimitedly beautiful body and transcendental abode of the Lord. Right? So it's connected. He has all those, and so therefore that's why you're connected with the Lord. But on the lowest level, so only on the knowledge and renunciation part. Thus, this Nirvikara Brahman, being immutable, inactive, incorporeal, and impersonal, it is in itself not the perfect absolute source, but the subordinate attribute of the Supreme Lord. The light of the fire is not the self-accomplished and dynamic principal source, but is solely dependent on the fire for its existence. So this is another very good example. Jivadharma. Chapter 13. Yeah. Is that, we're good? Yeah. Yeah. So just another is that it's not complete in that way. It's not the perfect absolute source. It's absolute, but it's not the perfect absolute because it's dependent upon the source, which is Bhagavan. Just as light is dependent upon fire. Riti, the next Adhikarana, proves the superiority of Bhagavan over Brahman based on the enumeration of the scriptures, such as the Shrutis and Smritis. Right? So now we're taking another angle, because otherwise we say, okay, we accept that. But in this scripture, it says this, you know, and immediately we're, you know, feeling enthusiastic. Okay. The next Adhikarana proves the superiority of Bhagavan over Brahman based on the enumeration of the scriptures such as the Shrutis and Smritis. Now here's a listing of the Shrutis and Smritis. So one, explain how Shabda Brahman is the form of the Supreme Lord, right? Two, why Brahman is designated as an impersonal vibhuti of the Lord. Three, out of the six opulences of Bhagavan, which is the foremost and why? And four, why is Brahman called Brahman Jyoti? Right? So we got that? That's self-explanatory. So that's the, no? Okay. Adhikarana 3. Bhagavan is superior to Brahman by enumeration. Anuchedas 90 and 100. Adhikarana Prakashika. In this Adhikarana, Srila Jiva Goswami cites from various Shrutis and Smritis to further affirm the superiority of Bhagavan, which is being substantiated in the earlier Adhikarnas. In Anucheta 99, the excerpt of Lord Shiva's instructions to Prajetas is quoted, wherein Lord Shiva states as follows, quote, he who has completely surrendered to Vasudeva, who is superior to Maya, to the Jiva Shakti and Brahman, is dear to me. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-28. In Anucheta 100, Srila Jiva Goswami cites verses from Taittiriya Upanishad, chapter 2, entitled Brahmanandavali, where there is a description of Anandamaya Purusha, Bhagavan, along with four other Purushas. In this section, it is clearly established that Brahman is inferior to the Supreme Lord, right? That's within the absolute platform, not compared to here. Okay, inferior to Supreme Lord, who is the abode of intense bliss, Ananda. Thus, the scriptural quotations enlisted in this Adhikarana clearly demonstrate that Bhagavan is the master of Brahman and thus is superior. Anucheta 99. Bhagavan is described as superior to Brahman by enumeration. Yath param rahasas sakshad tri gunaj jiva samhitat bhagavantam vasudevam prapannas sapriyo hime. He was completely surrendered to Vasudeva, who is superior to Maya, to the Jiva Shakti, and Brahman is dear to me. Right? So you see here this aspect is superior to Brahman also. So that's what you're pointing, is that Bhagavan is superior to Brahman. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-28. Udriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Shiva explains why he is merciful to the Prachetas. One who has surrendered completely to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva is dear to me. Who is he? He is superior to the son of Mahasa, Pradhana or Prakriti. Still here.
It's gone a little low, Marge.
I don't hear you too good. So I can't tell. Can you hear properly?
Not so well.
Again, we're getting like that. No one can hear? It seems to be working. Okay. Yeah? Okay. Who is he? Who is he? Yeah. Okay. Who is he? He is superior to the subtle, rahasa, pradhan, or prakriti, and superior to the purusha, jiva, samhita. That means the antaryami, paramat.
This is Srinath Swami's explanation.
That's better now.
Now it's better. Mm-hmm. Took a while to connect somehow.
Yeah.
I was hearing, but it wasn't connected. It seems that it connects the hearing part and then separately the talking part. Because
mm-hmm.
I wondered why sometimes it comes up twice that it connected.
We were hearing you, but it was through the phone, so therefore the volume's lower rather than through the earpiece.
I see. Oh, that's weird. Okay. Okay. This is Sridhar Swami's explanation. Or the Lord is superior to Maya Shakti, Jiva Shakti, and to that which is most difficult to perceive, Rahasa, the Brahman without qualities. Gita says, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, I am the basis of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita 18:27, Sardartha Darshini 4:24-28. Right, so he's showing different ways that you can see this, because rahasa can mean pradhan or prakriti, and superior to the to purusha, meaning the jivas, right? So that means the paramatma, right? Or it can mean he's superior to maya shakti, jiva shakti, and to the brahman. So different ways, but the point is Bhagavan is the superior to all the different aspects. Vasudeva is superior, param, to Brahman, rahasa. Thus he is superior to Pradhan, Trigunat, and to the Jiva. He who surrenders to Vasudeva by hearing and chanting and not offering karmas is dear to me. In the Naraka Dvadasi Vrata, there is praise of Vishnu. So here is an interesting point. Here he's saying, he who surrenders to Vasudeva by hearing and chanting, not by offering karmas, is dear to me. So we can see is that when we're talking also in this pastime of Lord Chaitanya with Ramananda Rai, then they're bringing out that aspect of offering means performing one's duties to please the Lord, offering the fruits of one's duties. So here in this context, you get the idea is that as a separate process of advancement, then it will be inferior. Because there might be those who only perform their duties in context. They're not chanting Hare Krishna. They're not hearing and chanting about the Lord. Or they're giving the results of their karma to the Lord, but not chanting or hearing about Vishnu in the association of devotees. So that's inferior. So along with chanting, then these can be supportive and useful. But on their own, there won't be. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Naraka Dvadasi Vrata, there's the praise of Vishnu. Vishnu is the master of all elements, such as ether, sound, ear, and mahatattva, prakriti. The jiva and Brahman. Vasudeva is situated as the one soul of everything. By this truth, may all my sins, which give hellish pain, be destroyed. May this truth give me the glory of auspiciousness every day, Vishnu Dharma. According to the context, the word Sarvatma cannot mean anything else, such as Brahman. In the story of Kshatriya Bandhu, it is said, the Supreme Lord is present in the impersonal Brahman. He is present in the unmanifested Pradhan. He is present in the manifested material cosmos. I shall become his devotee. Vishnu Dharma 94:58. Just as Achyuta Paramatma is superior to all others, he is also superior to Brahman. Therefore, unlimited Achyuta, you should fulfill my wish and remove me from all dangers. Vishnu Dharma 26:13. The Lord, para-para-bhuta, one who has gone to the other bank, who is beyond the material worlds, is superior to Brahman, Vishnu Purana. Aksharat tata parataf para. The Lord is superior to Brahman. Mundaka Upanishad 2:12. Shiva spoke thus to the Prachetas. Anucheta 100. So when they see stuff like that, that's where they means this one where it says he's superior to Brahman. That's where they say, oh, he's just saying that for us. But then all the other stuff, he's not just saying it for us. Why is it this one we change and the other ones we don't change? Anucheta 100. The same meaning is found in Taittiriya Upanishad. Oh. In discussing the various Purushas, in discussing various elements of the Lord, it is said, idam pucham pratishta, prithivi pucham pratishta, mahav pucham pratishta, brahma pucham pratishta. The deity of the earth is the lower body, the foundation. The pure jiva is the lower body, the foundation. Brahman is the lower body, the foundation. Taittiriya Upanishad 2:1. The Lord is then stated to be superior to all these elements in the same text. Gita says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I am the basis of Brahman, Bhagavad Gita 14:27. The word Brahman in this verse reminds one of the Shruti statement, Brahma pucham pratishta, that is the purpose of the word he in the Gita verse. The previous verse is thus, he who serves me alone in pure devotional service surpasses the gunas and becomes endowed with his and spiritual nature. Okay, Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Right.
Yeah, so it's by devotion you suppress, you come to the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, then no. So even before he said, you'll understand Brahman by understanding me. So it's not a separate understanding, but one shouldn't be bewildered about that position. Otherwise, one won't fully understand the Lord. So in other words, if there's an attachment for the impersonal concept, then one won't completely understand the Lord. One won't completely understand Brahman. Therefore, one will make these mistakes. But as you surrender to the Lord exclusively, as it said, all that whole list who's beyond all these things. So it's Krishna, not material energy or the position of the jiva or the position of Brahman or anything else. It's just about that pure devotion to Krishna. Then Krishna is very pleased. Then you understand everything. Yeah? Good? Yeah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.